think I'm switched on now, aren't I? Yeah, folks are nodding. That's good. So, do you ever have the situation that I came across when there's something that you think you know really well, but you get caught out by a surprise in it? Perhaps, I'm not into sport, but perhaps if you're very into sport, you suddenly get surprised by a twist in the rules that you didn't know was there. You know, one of those complex sports like cricket or something, where something's permitted or not permitted, and you think, oh, I never knew that. Or perhaps a recipe that you thought you knew what to do. You know, I've got some recipes that I just kind of do. I don't look at a book, I just do. And I happened to look one up for a cheesecake recently, and I came across a great surprise. I should have been putting sultanas in it for years and years. I never knew that, and I've not been putting them in. And I tell you what, I didn't bother. But the recipe had sultanas in it. And then it happened to me. It was much earlier this year, actually. I was preparing for another service, and I was looking through in the back of my big study Bible. I've got like a sort of index of subjects and words, and I was looking at places, particularly in the Old Testament, where it talks about God's Spirit coming on his people. And, you know, there was that one about right back at the beginning, at the creation, God's Spirit brooding over the waters. I love that word, brooding. Brooding. And there was that reading about God's Spirit coming on old people and young people, men and women and all sorts, came from the book of Joel. And then I spotted this reference, the one we heard from Exodus earlier. And in my index it said, I have filled him with the Spirit of God. And I thought, that'll be Moses. It was in my mind going to be all about God's Spirit filling Moses. But I was wrong, wasn't I? It was about this man who at that point I thought I'd never heard of before. And then, and sometimes God does this to us, doesn't he? He kind of keeps prodding with something, and his name kept coming up in things. People mentioned him in services or in Bible studies, and it felt like, you know, God was digging at me. And I got a bit interested in this subject, and so I've looked into Bezalel and his world a bit, and his team of helpers. And Mark and I played on Google. You know, you can, if you type in a Bible name on Google, it will tell you out loud how to say it. And we've been practicing at home because they're really tricky. And they did a fantastic job of really tricky readings, didn't they? Yeah, two readings full of unknown people. I get it right most of the time, maybe not always. But Bezalel, just to give you a bit of a broader sense of the scene, the book of Exodus, the second book in the Bible, is full of God's instructions about how the people that Moses had rescued from Egypt should live as they travelled to their new promised land, and how they should settle and worship him there. And it's full of rich detail, instructions that are really precise about this building, this tent that they were to construct, the Ark of the Testimony, and all the furniture that was to be in it. It was mobile. They could pack it all up and move on when they moved to a new place. But don't imagine that meant it was a simple structure or basic. It was beautiful and ornate and precisely constructed. And we're told that God had chosen is an important word here, Bezalel, to be in charge of making all these things. And God had filled him with his Spirit to enable him to do it. So the result is that Bezalel and his crew of helpers have got the skill and ability and knowledge they need in all those various crafts. And there's a really long list in the Bible, in both what we heard and then in chapters 35 and 36, if you want to check me later. So they needed to be good at metalwork in gold and silver and bronze. They needed to be good at cutting and setting stones, precious things. They needed to be good at woodwork. They needed to be good at weaving and making garments. They needed to be able to make oil and incense for the worship. They needed to be designers and good at embroidery. Now, I love watching the repair shop on television. Don't know whether it's a bit of a Marmite thing, isn't it? Lots of ladies nodding. I love watching that ability to transform something, you know, that's old and tattered and but loved into something that looks good again while keeping its history. And I'm amazed at what those people can do to, you know, their skills in intricate things amazes me. But you know what? Each of them is good at one thing, isn't it? So Will's good at woodwork. And there's those two ladies, Amanda and I can't remember her friend's name, who work on toys. And there's Susie who does leather work and so on. And sometimes they get something that needs more than one skill, where they need to be able to do two or three things to achieve it. And they pull in their friends, other people from the programme, to work on those parts of it together, or they share the work between them, so that different people do different things. But in this case, we could explore it a whole different angle on this, but in this case, what God chose to do was to fill these people, Bezalel and his team, with his spirit and give them all of the skills that they needed to achieve it. He didn't have to do it all on his own, but he was able to do all of those things. So I want to just hold three points that we will come back to a bit later as kind of the main things, the takeaways. God chose Bezalel. We don't know why he picked that man. We don't know very much about that man. But God chose him, and it all came from God. And secondly, God filled him with his spirit. He gave him, through his spirit, the skill and the wisdom and the energy to achieve it. It all came from God. God's spirit working in him enabled him to do it. And the result was this wide range of very practical skills. You know, they're not the kind of spiritual things that perhaps I was expecting when I first saw the reading. They're not the ability to pray or to preach or to have prophecy. They're the ability to make stuff and do stuff. And sometimes I think we forget about God working in the ability to do that. So let's come to that New Testament reading with an equal collection of difficult people's names. It's in chapter 5 of Acts, and you might remember that God's Spirit had come upon those early Christians, and there'd been fire and wind, and they could talk different languages, and coming from that, the church was in a time of great growth. Lots of people are being added daily to their number. And then, as often happens in time of growth, trouble breaks out. People start to moan and grumble and feel like they're not getting treated fairly. There's this row between the Greek Jews and the Hebrew Jews about whether their widows are being properly looked after, fairly provided with food. Of course, in those days, there was no social security, and it was expected that each part of society would look after those within their group who were unable to provide for themselves, and widows were perhaps one of the most common types of that situation. So these women who'd lost their husbands, and so their providers in that society, need to rely on the church, and some apparently aren't being treated fairly. So they do what churches do, they have a meeting. That's what we like to do, isn't it? Get together and talk about it. And I don't know about you, but in these situations, when people at work bring me things that are moans and grumbles or aren't being done well, I've got a bad habit. I say, right, I'll take control of this myself. I'll do it myself. And I get a bit about it sometimes. But you know what? Those first apostles, the 12 apostles, had a much better response. They decided that they would ask the group to pick some people who could do this thing properly, who could concentrate on it, who would be good at it. People who were full of God's Spirit, who could take responsibility for this important practical task. And we know the names of these people, and some of them we know a little bit more about. So there was Stephen, he got stoned to death in just the next chapter. There was Philip, he'd been the one who preached in Samaria, and then probably was the man who went and explained the scripture to the Ethiopian chap who was on his chariot going home. And then there's four people we don't know anything about. Procurus, Nicanor, Timon, and Parmenas. We just know their names. They were one of those seven groups. And there was Nicholas, who came from Antioch. And he'd been a Gentile. He'd been a non-Jewish convert. So we know very little about these men. They're not big, famous characters, but God filled them with his Spirit and gave them the wisdom they needed to deal with those disagreements and ensure that everybody got fairly treated. Really tricky task, but practical and important to make sure that the church thrived and grew. So I don't know about you, but I'm really encouraged when I read these readings. It can be tempting for us to focus on those big famous characters, you know, the Moses and Peters of the Bible, to think about these men whose abilities are so out there that I feel a bit unable to kind of achieve that level. They could do miracles. I feel like often I can't do those sorts of things. And perhaps we think about modern day Christians who are in the public eye, who can do big and famous things. But the point is that God chooses ordinary, unknown people, and he fills them with his Spirit, and he enables them to do a whole wide range of practical and tricky tasks. And you know what? You and I are those ordinary people. God chooses us, and he gives us his Spirit. He fills us and strengthens us, as we heard at the beginning, to go out and work for him. So just go back to those three things to take away, because it's good to hear things we want to remember more than once, isn't it? So God chooses us, you and me. We don't know why. We often feel like we don't deserve it. We often feel like we're not sure that we're up to it. But God chooses us. It comes from God, and it's him working in us. And he fills us. He gives us everything we need in our inner being and in our practical skills to work out the plan he has for us, the tasks he has for us to do, the people he wants us to be. And the result of God's Spirit working in us is that we can do more than we ever think possible, achieve things of great beauty and great permanence and great importance. So let's think for a moment. Often it's easier to spot this in other people, isn't it? And perhaps you're all thinking of somebody you know. And you think, yeah, God's really working that thing in them. It's good to notice that and to recognise it. But it's also good to think about ourselves and think about how we see that being worked out in our own lives. Sometimes the tasks don't seem very spiritual. But God doesn't seem to see that distinction. I was talking about this idea at another church, and they were about to have a thing they called a sausage supper. And it was a way of getting their church family together, and they were going to have sausage and mash and gravy together. And the comparison that we drew in that discussion was about how the person who's going to cook their sausages for their sausage supper is doing God's work and is an example of this practical task, just as much as their minister who was going to come the next week and serve them with communion with bread and wine. You know, both things are God using his Spirit through people to achieve important things. So I just want to finish by sharing a phrase that I came across recently in my daily reading that I also hadn't spotted before. John chapter 3, a really well-known passage in John chapter 3. Jesus says, "For God gives the Spirit without limit." There's no kind of restriction and limit on what God does through us. He fills us up to bursting, to overflowing. So let's be quiet for a moment and reflect on people we've seen that worked out on, and reflect on where we've seen it in our own lives, and ask God to fill us again and to equip us again for his work. And I'm just going to pull that together with a kind of summarizing prayer in a moment. Let's be quiet. Today, Lord, I live in your spirit. You make life to shine. As our lungs take in air to sing, I walk filled in your spirit. The fruits of my hoping, the fruits of my living. Today, Lord, I live in your love. Love that will speak to others with the sound of your grace. Full of mercy and forgiveness. Foundation of my faith. The fruits of my living. Amen.
Thank you, Jane.